to the audio event of the century, featuring two lifelong best friends. We love the Leafs. We love each other. But most of all, we love William Nylander. Welcome to the Buds All Day.
Hello and welcome to the Buds All Day post-game reaction podcast. I'm Sats Mundine here with Lebda's Legacy.
How's it going, everyone?
And we are going to wrap up an absolutely thrilling 4-3 overtime loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. Now, if you watch the game, you know I'm being completely sarcastic. That game was boring. The Leafs lost 4-3. They got goals from Muzzin, Tavares, and Matthews, while the Sens got their goals from Zaitsev, Brown, Kelly, and Norris. Now, Lebda, what did you think of tonight's tilt?
Yeah, you definitely summed it up when you said most exciting game there, because oh boy, was this a barn burner. But, I mean, let's be honest. Leafs are, they have nothing left to play for in the regular season. There's probably a bit of them trying not to get injured. They're just coming in tonight. Hey, if we win, good. Like, they're still technically in the President's Chase run, but obviously, you know, with the loss tonight, that's out of the question. But, yeah, deserved to win a meter for the Leafs at 47%, Corsi percent 4 at 47, high danger Corsi 4 at 59%, and expected goals at 43%. So you could definitely see that the real Toronto Maple Leafs didn't show up tonight, but one thing is for certain, the real Frederik Andersen did show up tonight.
Yeah, before we get into that, I do want to agree with your one of your points about injuries. I think that is pretty much the only major thing that I wanted this to happen in this game. Was to come out injury free, and that was the most important thing, and we did that. So we're one game away from a healthy playoff lineup. Now, like you said, the other two things I would look at were Freddie and the power play. So let's get into Freddie first. He faced 28 shots tonight, allowed 4 goals, and just didn't really look good in the process.
Yeah, man, like, oh, just a stinky, stinky, stinky game from Fred. Now, I know he is coming off an injury. It's his third start in the last, like, 2 months or whatever. So, sure, I guess maybe there's some excuses built in for him. But this was Fred Anderson's one chance to, you know, come out, post a crazy game, get a shutout, make lots of big saves, and then at least have the Leafs think about him being an option in the playoffs, or the second option, I should say, in the playoffs. But he comes out tonight. He wasn't great in his AHL starts. That's kind of whatever. And then lets in, I'd say, 3 really stinky goals and a 4th, you know, meh goal. Didn't really look like he was, you know, flying around the net. Didn't really look like he was tracking the puck well. Just he looked just bad tonight. So I think he kind of took that one out of the Leafs' hands, and I don't think there's really any chance we see Fred Anderson in the playoffs unless something really, really disastrous happens.
I hope you're right, but to be honest, I could still see him starting game 4, as crazy as it sounds. It's just based on the sentiment on Leafs Twitter right now, a lot of people seem to be thinking that. Now, there are a lot of Freddie stans on there that stick through him through thick and thin, but I don't know. It's up in the air whether he gets that game 4 in a back-to-back in the first round, if that is when it happens. You said he had 3 really bad goals, 1 he couldn't blame him. I would say, like, none of the goals were unstoppable masterpiece goals. Like, the first goal that Zaitsev won from the point, I could give him a pass on that. He was screened. Hutton didn't clear his man. Second goal comes off a breakaway, and he did make the first save, but just, that was his problem tonight, was after he made that breakaway save on Connor Brown, he just completely lost where he was and was completely lost in the net, and it was a pretty easy finish for Brown to get home that rebound, so that was ugly. And then he got scored on from the corner, which is relatively par for the course for playoff Fred, but we're seeing it in what I guess is his playoffs. And yeah, just a very Frederik Andersen performance. Before the game, my prediction was Fred was going to face about 25 shots and allow 3 goals. I said 2 of those were going to be the classic, well, it wasn't his fault, but you might like a save. And then the third one was just going to be a stinky, stinky McStinkerson. And honestly, my guess was pretty good. Like, 4 goals on 28, similar save percentage to what I projected. And on at least, you know, 2 of those goals, you're saying, you're smelling those diapers.
So I'll go all the way back to the first goal. That's kind of the one where, you know, maybe you're not really getting too pissed off of Fred. I'm going to say this right now. I think that's a bad goal for a goalie to give up. That's a shot from the corner. That's a weak, fluttering little floater. And sure, he's screened, but a goalie's job is to be in a good position so pucks hit him. That's how goalies make their saves in that instance. And Fred is notoriously bad at that, being in good position. He just looks so small there. Sure, he's screened, but he should be bigger, and that puck should just hit his shoulder, not make it to the chance where it goes post and in. Maybe that's a little too harsh. That's just the way I see it. Now, kind of the rest of the goals all in the night, like, there's not much you can say other than Fred Anderson clearly is not at an NHL level right now on all those. All those are him being a little bit slow, whether the one from the corner, he was just slow coming across his net, which, again, his injuries, that's probably the reason why. Connor Brown goal, boom, he saves the breakaway. Great job, Fred. Awesome. And then just is, like, slow to react to the rebound. He's swimming everywhere. Looks uncomfortable. Doesn't look like he's, you know, really ready to be in an NHL net there. So, I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to pile on him too much. But also, this is probably Fred Anderson's last game as a Leaf. And, you know, he's been just trash for 2 years. And one of the biggest reasons we haven't, you know, made a deep push. So, you know what? Maybe I will take tonight and have a little Fred slander night.
Yeah, I'll be a little more generous to him, but I agree with pretty much everything you said. That first goal, I'm not a goaltending expert, so I'm not going to criticize his positioning just because I don't totally know. That was kind of my sentiment, where if I were talking to somebody who were a real goaltending expert, I would kind of ask them their opinion. But that one at least seemed like somewhat passable. But for me, it wasn't even just the goals tonight. It was just the level of discomfort that he had. Like you said, he was not tracking the puck. A lot of the times he was pretty good at making that first save tonight, but as he had no idea where the rebounds were or where they were going. And you could just see how unsure he was of himself when he's looking back. And people can say that he's shaking off rust, and that's a very fair point. But at the same time, his next game is going to be a playoff game if he plays. I don't see him shaking off rust in the next week, you know, like without getting a real consistent string of games. If there were 15 games left in the season, then I'd say, yeah, for sure, give him more chances to earn that net back. Or not even earn it back, to earn the backup spot. But every game in the playoffs is just so vital that I don't want to be throwing a guy in there who I'm not sure even believes in himself. So I think, I don't know how it's going to shake out. I think he still has a chance of being the backup. I it's totally up in the air for me. But if it's me and I'm Sheldon Keefe, I'm probably going with no save Dave. Just because he's more of a wild card in a good sense to me. Like, you saw that game against Vancouver. P.U., that was stanky. But at the same time, we saw his games against Toronto. I feel like he's just a heads or tails kind of goalie at this point, where he's either going to be prime Patrick Waugh or prime Vesa Toskala. There's not a ton in between. Whereas I just feel like Freddie, if you throw him in there, it's like a 90% chance you're getting not tragic goaltending, but just shitty goaltending. So I'd probably rather just roll the dice on a 50-50 in Dave Riddick, because the Habs are a team that's going to direct pucks at the net in the playoffs. And if you can't be confident in Fred to make the easy saves every time, that could be a dangerous, dangerous proposition.
Yeah, at least David Riddick isn't broken goods. He might not have had the highs that Fred Anderson once had, but he's not broken goods right now. He's just not a great NHL goaltender. So I think your kind of point there going to Dave Riddick is a little bit of the safer option, because who knows, like, Frederick Anderson could just not be an NHL goalie anymore. If those injuries add up, and look at how he's played, an 857, I believe, tonight in the AHL looked not great coming back from another injury. Like, those could just be compounding for the guy, and it just could honestly be the end of Frederick Anderson's. I'm sure he'll get a shot in the summer, but who knows what he's going to look like next year. Maybe he does get fully healthy, can recover a bit. But I think going to Fred Anderson in the playoffs is just such a recipe for disaster, because you just see it so much. He just lets in those little squeakers. And if a goalie lets in squeakers, it's just so detrimental to kind of the confidence of the team and how a team is going forward. Whereas if, you know, maybe David Riddick, he isn't the best goalie, but he's going to give up chances that are a little bit more high danger. Like, as a team, at least that's not so demoralizing, because you're like, oh, we gave up a high danger chance, we need to be a little bit better. Whereas you see those Freddie squeakers go in and you're like, oh, this dude can't even stop a shot from the blue line. Like, we have no chance. So, you know, we're just going to coast out there the rest of the game, try and come back at it, you know, next time.
Yeah, it is pretty sad for Freddie because he was the backbone of this team for so many years with just tragic defense in front of him, and he stood tall for the most part. I know he had his playoff failures, but it would have been nice to see the guy get a chance with a legitimate NHL defense in front of him. But at this point, you can't be worried about feelings or anything like that. You just have to go with what's going to give you the best chance. And I genuinely think Dave Riddick does provide that chance. If it were a scenario where Fred were just having a bad year this year and it were kind of a thing where you could say, yeah, maybe it was because of that injury he had earlier and he's just working back, that's fine. But it's been like this since November of 2019 for Fred. He has been absolutely tragic. And you said it, he had that groin injury, and we've seen it with Carey Price. Carey Price has had injuries too. We talk about him all the time. That's why he's not the same goalie. It's not because he's not trying hard. It might not even be a confidence thing. It's just, if you can't make those side-to-side movements as quickly as you once could, NHL shooters are going to be able to take advantage of that every single time.
Boom. Like, hammer on the nail's head right there. That's exactly the point. And going back to that November time frame, if we look at that exact same time frame, Michael Hutchinson and David Riddick have both outperformed Frederik Andersen in that time frame. So even if we're like, oh, you know, it's only a small sample size, Fred coming back, or he had a couple games this year, it's, you know, a weird year, like, boom, we can go back to a bigger sample size, and the two goalies, you know, behind Fred Andersen in the depth chart have outperformed him in that time. So I'm just done seeing Freddie. He makes me angry. He upsets me. I don't want to see him in the net. He always has a bad attitude after a bad game in the press conferences where he blames the team's defense and all this, never takes ownership up for it. Like, I'm just ready to not have Freddie on this team anymore and just get rid of him. Boom, move forward with Jack Campbell. If Jack Campbell, you know, struggles down the stretch, then you know what? We're just going to kind of have to live with that a bit and hope, you know, maybe Dave Riddick can step up for a game or two, or Jack can just find it. But I'm just so done with Fred Andersen.
Yeah, and it's not even like we're not Dave Riddick stands. I do not think he's good goalie. He's maybe a passable backup, but he's just the wild card that I feel more likely to potentially have a good game than Fred. Yeah, it's just, this is kind of exemplifying what we talked about before the deadline, where we really wanted Dubas to acquire another goalie. Kudos to Dubas. You have to give him an absolute round of applause for acquiring Jack Andersen, because that move looks like an absolute masterstroke. But there's a lot on Jack Campbell's shoulders right now, where if he falters, if he has an injury, the backups are not inspiring any confidence in me. Now, I think that's enough goaltending conversation for one podcast. So I do want to get into one positive Kyle Dubas addition, and that is Nick Foligno, because, man, was he just a little shithead today.
It's funny. So I'm going to go back to goaltending real quick and then talk about how awesome Nick Foligno was tonight. So the common criticism, you and me are probably first in line for that, was the Nick Foligno trade versus Taylor Hall, being like, oh, that's going to be a big mistake, Kyle. And we're not going to get into that trade tonight at all. But I think what Kyle Dubas' biggest mistake low-key could be is settling for David Riddick over an anti-Ranta or a type like that. I know for a fact
Linus Allmark,
they kicked tires on Allmark. I know they at least made an offer for anti-Ranta, whether it was super serious or super close or not. Who knows? Like, maybe they had to give up a little bit extra. But I'm really hoping that move does not come out to bite him in the ass. But one trade that is definitely not coming out to bite him in the ass, and boy, oh boy, did he prove it tonight, is Nick Foligno. Because, man, did he look like just an absolute rat bastard out there. And I'm absolutely here for that style of play from him.
He was just finishing every check. I saw Tkachuk was getting into something after the whistle, snowing the goalie or something, and he was not letting him have it. He had that kind of that cocky little smirk looking at him. I loved it. And he was like cross-checking. He was just being a pain in the ass to play against. And that's exactly what I'm looking for from Nick Foligno. His numbers on the first line the first few games were excellent. Like the expected goals, the scoring chance ratio while he was on the ice, it's looked good. And tonight the numbers weren't there quite as much for that line, but you know, that they didn't have a ton to play for, but you could see that Nick Foligno certainly had a lot to play for. He wants to get himself into playoff shape, and he got me excited with his play tonight.
And I think that's what it was too. He saw his team, you know, maybe coasting a little bit, or maybe not as intense as they should be. And he's like, you know what? Maybe it's not going to take effect this game, but people are going to notice it a little bit. and maybe it'll rub off, and especially come playoff time if I have to do this because the boys are getting down a little bit. And I think that's where maybe I definitely missed the mark personally on Foligno, is I didn't value that stuff as much. But man, oh man, can you not argue with the results?
Yeah, my complaint, I was a little higher on the Foligno acquisition because I definitely saw the benefit of it. I know he's that playoff guy. He's going to take advantage of the tight whistle in the playoffs. He's going to do all that stuff. So I always liked him. I was a bit worried by his poor numbers in Columbus this year, just his defensive metrics and things like that. But, you know, you could take everything from Columbus with a grain of salt this year. He's looking well. My only gripe was just I just wanted to have two insane scoring lines with Taylor Hall. But it's I could listen to the other side of the argument saying that you think Foligno can provide something that Taylor Hall couldn't in the playoffs when the games are a little tighter, rush offense slows down a bit. We'll see how it works out, but I definitely love the addition of Foligno onto this team. Now, another addition that Dubas made was Ben Hutton. And tonight he kind of solidified that he's the eighth, maybe even the ninth defenseman on this team, if you want to throw Liljegren in there.
Yeah, I do feel a little bit – nah, I don't really feel bad for him, but I do feel a little bit bad for him at the same time for Ben Hutton, because he did kind of have this tough thing where he's coming from Anaheim, so he has that quarantine, doesn't play a bunch. Toronto's AHL team had that kind of COVID situation or whatever, so he couldn't even go down there and play any games when he wasn't in the lineup. You had Sandin coming in playing so well, like he's not going to get booted out. And now he did get booted out for, you know, salary cap restraints or constrictions or whatever you want to call them. And now we're seeing, you know, a good bunch of games from Ben Hutton. He's just like, he's not the answer. I think I actually texted you saying maybe Marty Marincin is better. Let's hope neither of them, you know, we don't see either of them really come playoff time. But I think he's definitely behind Liljegren and Sandin, Bogosian, Dermott, all those guys at this point.
Yeah, his possession numbers and his expected goals weren't too bad tonight, like 50%. Him, I mean, it's not great, it's not bad, but for the way the Leafs performed tonight, it actually wasn't too bad. But it was just more of an eye test assessment tonight. Just he was turning pucks over on the first goal that Zaitsev scored. He didn't clear the front of the net. He didn't help Freddie to see it. He just looked uncomfortable out there. And you do make a good point. He hasn't played much, so it is definitely tough for him. But you look at the way Rasmus Sandin plays after not playing for a year, and it's as if it wasn't already obvious, but that he is clearly above Ben Hutton at this point. And I think when it's all said and done, Sandin's going to be in the playoff lineup, whether Bogosian returns on time or not.
Yeah, I think the ideal bottom pairing is Sandin Bogosian in the playoffs. Now, whether Bogosian's healthy for game one of the playoffs, who knows, but I think you'll definitely see Sandin starting game one of the playoffs. And honestly, I hope you see him too. Like, he's been so good. He's so good with the puck. He adds that extra little bit of an element that, you know, I don't think Travis Dermott is a bad bottom six pairing defenseman. I'd argue he's even a good one. But you can't deny that Sandin offers a little bit more going forward. And up to this point, he hasn't suffered too much defensively compared to Dermott. So I just think Sandin's a better option at this point.
Yeah, he just offers a lot more of an X-factor capability. Not to mention, Dermott doesn't play special teams. He doesn't play power play. He doesn't play penalty kill. At least Sandin can be a power play option. And especially after you watch the way Morgan Riley performed on that power play tonight, I think that would definitely tip the scales in Sandin's favor, because Morgan did not do anything to earn that spot back today.
Just anytime you need Morgan Riley to just be smart on the ice, it's just where he falters. He's obviously very talented hockey player. He just makes stupid decisions time in and time out. And on the power play that's struggling, you can't have your defenseman making stupid decisions when you have that much talent around him.
So yeah, tonight was a very tough night for the Leafs power play. They did get a goal, which we will get into. It came from the second unit, but they gave up a shorthanded goal as well. And it just did not look crisp. They just don't have any, there's no danger when they're on the ice. It just seems like they're passing it around, and that's if they even get into the zone.
It's such a weird thing, this Leafs power play, because this team absolutely scores goals at will 5v5, and especially, you know, Matthews and Marner. Tavares and Nylander score a bunch, you know. It's so weird that this power play struggles so much. So for me, like, it's just further confirming the fact that, you know, whether it's Manny Malhotra or Sheldon Keefe. Manny Malhotra, I know, is the assistant coach in charge of the power play. Now, whether Keefe has taken charge the last couple weeks and, you know, taken it over. But it's clear that it's coaching is the problem. The way they're setting these guys up is the problem. Because you see their 5v5 play, and they're so good at entering the zone. They're so creative in the zone. They go to dangerous areas 5v5. They do all this stuff, and then they get on the power play, and they're all just standing still. They can't enter the zone. Like, nothing happens. So there's just some weird disconnect between the players and the coaches.
Yeah, they're just locked into their spots so frequently. It's hard to watch, and a lot of it stems from the fact that, to me, that they have Marner and Matthews on their non-one-timer sides, and then it wouldn't be as big of a deal if Marner were a shooter, but he's not. So they give him so much space every time, which basically takes away the biggest benefit of Mitch Marner, which is his passing, because those other four penalty killers can just cover the other players, especially when you have Morgan Riley as the point man, who you don't have to, like, who cares if you give the puck to Riley? He's just going to either lay off a pretty shitty pass to Matthews or Marner, or he's going to waffle a 1 mile an hour wrist shot. So I think they need to totally change the structure of this before the playoffs. I was concerned because in the broadcast, they said that the Leafs worked on the power play for a long time yesterday. If that's the case, that is a wasted practice, unless they were, for some reason, they're just hiding their power play and they're going to break out this new strategy come playoff time. Because if they're just going to run the same stupid formation and the same Marner on the right half wall, Matthews on the left half wall, let's do everything we can to try to get that puck to Matthews, even though the other team knows it's coming. Every single person watching this game knows it's coming and it never goes off. I hope that they try something new come playoffs.
Yeah, I actually made a note of that exact same thing. The broadcast saying how much time the Leafs spent working on the power play. And then the first power play comes out, and I look at it, I'm like, they literally changed nothing. They're struggling this much, and they haven't changed a thing. The breakout's the exact same. The zone entry is the exact same. The setup is the exact same. What are you practicing? Like, are you just practicing Matthews shooting on your goalies? Because you could do something else with that time, man. Like, I don't understand, like, they're spending all this practice time. What are they doing with it? Change something. Do anything. Dude, at this point, throw six defense or five defensemen on the power play. Who cares? Like, it can't get any worse. You need to change something. And the coaching staff is just so unwilling to change. I don't understand why. I hope they're not just, you know, hey, we started off the year, we were the best power play in the league, so clearly this system works, so we're going to stick to this system and not change this system ever. But at this point, maybe you're right with the, you know, the playoff thing where they're not showing their hand too much, but like, get a little bit more desperate than this, like Sheldon Keefe and company.
That's my hope. I hope that they come out in game one with a completely different formation, because this is absolute garbage. They need to spend their 5 days, if they don't do anything else in practice, if they just spend these stupid 5 days off that the NHL is giving us, they need to spend every second of that working on the power play. Work on multiple things. You can work on your stupid formation that you've been doing for the last 3 years that works for 2 weeks every year and then goes completely dry for the rest of the season. Go ahead and do that. But they need to try something new. If you look at the cup winners, very rarely do they have a power play under 17%. And right now, we are clicking at like 3% for the last month and a half. And it's gotten embarrassing. I'm thinking that you may not agree with this. This is what my galaxy brain solution to this would be. I know Matthews has that excellent shot off the left side. It's the arguably the biggest weapon in hockey, but every team knows it's coming and it's been useless lately. So what I would do, I would put Matthews on that right half wall where they have Marner. And instead of putting Marner on the other side, I would put Nylander there. Give him, because Willie is a great passer too. He can find passing lanes. Let Marner work some magic behind the net. Like, put him in that Willie spot. Maybe if he's beside the net, if you give the puck to Marner down low, you don't think he can find a streaking Tavares or Matthews down there? Like, it would be something different. And then that way, Marner's lack of a shot isn't as much of a problem, because he's so close to the net where it's usually jamming at rebounds or like a little quick deke or like the little JVR quick hands play. I think he's way more capable of doing that, because for 3 years, our power play has sucked ever since we lost JVR and Bozak. And for 3 years, it's been Marner in that same spot. And I think that's the constant. If Marner had a better shot, I think it would be different, but he doesn't. So that is what I would try. What would you do?
So I don't have a problem with that in theory. The one thing I don't like about having one-timers is your exclusive kind of number one go-to option is, again, it kind of creates a lot of stagnant, you know, bodies around there where you have Matthews or you're looking for a one-timer and they're just standing there. And so, I mean, if you're Alex Ovechkin, like, he's made an absolute career out of that. So I get that. Maybe Austin Matthews can turn into the, you know, that type of option on the power play. But that's my biggest fear with that one-timer option is you have two guys that are constantly looking for one-timers. So that's two guys kind of stapled in place.
So I agree. That's a completely fair point. Now, I'm saying more one-timer sides. I'm not saying that they need to be looking for one-timers at all times. I'm saying they should just be in those positions because it just opens up so many more passing lanes. The fact, like, I think this power play would be a lot better if even Marner was just left-handed. Like, Matthews could be on that same side, that's fine. But I think if you're going to have somebody on the half wall that's kind of, like, you need one guy on the one-timer side just to kind of open up passing lanes because there's just nothing there when you, like, especially when every team knows it's coming. So I think I would try that, and I would have the one-timers as an option, but I think the goal of my power play would still be more to get the puck low to Marner because he's so shifty down there. He can find a lane, and when he's in that position down low, the defensemen are going to have to come closer to him because if they don't, then he can just walk in for an easy kind of jam chance at the net. Whereas when he's on the half wall, they can give him all the space he need, like all the space he wants because he's not going to be able to use it with his shot.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I obviously, you know, this is all hypothetical here, so who knows? That could be the solution to the Leafs' power play. I'm not against anything you've said, obviously. Now, for me, what I want to see is I want to see something a little bit more, I guess, out there, where we have Nylander and Marner both at, like, kind of the down low, like the goal line, like the red line. And then we have the other three in, you know, two a little bit lower, and then maybe Riley at the top. And I want all the pucks to be going down low to Marner or Nylander, and that's where their offense starts for. So if the puck is down low in one corner to Nylander, then Marner's kind of going back door or potentially circling around up top. The guy, like, at the very top is the one who's driving the net, like, straight on, kind of in that slot area or crashing the net. The guy on the other side will be, you know, going back door kind of thing. And then the guy on the other side is the one who either floats down out to the boards on the same side as the puck or, you know, cuts into the net, gets a bit of a screen if the puck does come back up top. But I want stuff like that. So every time the puck goes down low, you have just three guys moving or four guys moving all the time. And that's the biggest problem I see with the Leafs power play right now. As soon as the guy has the puck, no one else is really moving and they're just relying on their passes to get through bodies as opposed to movement. And also kind of with the thing I'm suggesting is there's a lot more like cross crease movement. So it's a lot more movement for the goalie to track and for the defenders to track. So if you have a guy coming across, you know, maybe a defender misses an assignment or who knows, maybe he interferes with him and you get a 5-on-3 coming across. I think a lot of that like cross crease down low movement, it's something that you don't see a lot in the NHL. I think it's something that could really surprise and maybe even confuse a few teams going forward.
That's a totally fair plan. I think the key is to get a lot of movement going because that makes you a lot more unpredictable. They can't just sell out and say, okay, I know Matthews is going to be right near the top of the circle waiting the whole time. And I know Marner's going to be on the other side. And I know Riley's going to stay there the whole time as well. I think the common theme in both of our suggestions is that you use the bottom of the zone, like you use near the red line, near the end of the zone to get some movement and we know that the statistics show that those passes from behind the net to out front have the highest shooting percentage. And then cross ice passes are equally as dangerous because the goalies, they have to adjust their eye movement. And I know Matthews doesn't have his ability to get that wrist shot off as much in those scenarios, but honestly, who cares at this point? It hasn't worked since what, January? So I think there's definitely a lot of things the Leafs can do. I just hope that they don't, if they come out in game one with this same stupid formation and it doesn't score, I'm going to lose it.
It's going to be, you know, that year Mike Babcock got destroyed by Boston's coach and basically lost us the series. Like, if Sheldon Keefe honestly can't figure out this power play, it could legitimately cost this team, who has a legit shot at the Stanley Cup, a shot at the Stanley Cup.
And it's weird because he's such a tinkering coach. Like, he's a lineup blender. Like, good luck to anyone who tries to predict what the playoff lineups are going to be. So, if you're going to mix up lines, mix up the power play too. Like, just, yeah, it could be a real black mark on his coaching tenure in Toronto. I hope it doesn't happen. I think we can possibly survive Montreal without the power play clicking, although they are a good 5-on-5 team, so that is going to be tough. But yeah, like, if you're going to make a serious run in the playoffs, if you're going to be facing the Colorados, the Tampas, the Vegases, I promise you, we are not getting by with a 0% power play. Now, getting to the actual events of the game, like we said, the game did start off pretty quickly for Ottawa. They were able to get that goal through Zaitsev. We don't need to go into it too much. We've kind of discussed it. Kind of an iffy goal on Fred. Now, they took that lead into the second period. And at that point, the Leafs did make hay on the power play tonight. Even though we talked about how bad it was all night, they got a goal, but it was from the second unit through Jake Muzzin.
Yeah, and I think this goal highlights exactly what, you know, you and me were talking about on the power play, is it was unpredictable. It was kind of random. And they scored on it because no one really knew what they were doing. You know, you see Kerfoot starting off with the puck. He tries to go out to the front of the net. Rebound falls there. Gets over to Thornton, who slides it to Muzzin, who slaps it top corner. Like, it's just that unpredictability that ends up in the back of the net for the Leafs.
That is 100% what it was. And it was funny because right before they scored that goal, I was just about to tweet, wow, the second power play unit actually looks more dangerous than the first tonight. And it's exactly because of what you said. You didn't know what was going to happen. When you watch the first unit, you know, okay, they're working it. Marner, Matthews, and Riley are going to play, you know, play catch with each other until Matthews gets an open shot, which he never ends up getting. Now, that was the good of the power play, and then we'll get into the absolute depths of the dirty dungeon for the power play, which was Connor Brown's shorthanded goal off of a rebound that he got after he was saved on a breakaway.
Yeah, so two real main culprits that often end up in the back of the Leafs net. So let's be honest, Morgan Riley shouldn't have let that become a breakaway. That's just a bad play on him. But then it does, and I'm like, holy crap, Freddie made a save on a breakaway. Wow. And then I look at my TV again, and I'm like, oh, now he's completely out of the net, and Connor Brown just taps it home. Like, again, we already ripped on Fred at the beginning of the podcast, but there's no way the Leafs should have lost this game tonight. And, I mean, that goal was just stinky, stinky, stinky.
Yeah, he's – you can credit him for the breakaway save. Good job. But that's just what his problem is. He loses his net right now, and it could just be because of the rust, but like we said, I don't think that's going to clear itself up in a week or two. So the game then Fred had his Mona Lisa, his pièce de résistance tonight, when Parker Kelly in his first career NHL game was able to score an absolute howler on Fred.
Yeah, that Connor Brown goal was bad. This one was, like, all-worldy bad. Like, if you're on the YouTube compilations, this one's making every single, you know, top 10 worst goals, because this one was brutal. I mean, hey, good job, Parker Kelly, scoring your first career goal in the last game of the Senators season. So, you know, a little tip of the cap to you. But, I mean, you're just lucky Fred Anderson started this game and not an actual NHL goalie.
Yeah, again, it just goes into he lost his net, like, what else can you say? You feel bad. Like we're laughing, but it is sad. Like you want to see the poor guy do something well. And just when his save percentage looks like, oh, it might creep up back to 900. Oh, okay. He let one in from the corner. Playoff ready in his finest form. Now the Leafs were able to take that lead, or the Sens had the 3-1 lead. The Leafs were able to cut it down to 3-2 off a John Tavares goal from a William Nylander assist, which was excellent, but I want to give a quick shout out to Jake Muzzin for that play. After he scored his goal, he was feeling really good in that offensive zone tonight. And he had the puck at the blue line, kind of in a no man's land position. He just fired a backhand dump like between the net and the corner. And it really created that chance for Willie.
Yeah. So this is exactly what we talk about all the time with Jake Muzzin, is his offense, contributions to the Maple Leafs are so underrated. And this is what he does well, because he's smart. He's like the opposite of Morgan Riley, where he's maybe not as gifted of a hockey player, but he actually has a brain in between his ears, so he makes nice plays like this. And then, I mean, this is an all-world pass by William Nylander and an all-world finish by Tavares, so he definitely, you know, got a little bit lucky having those two guys with that much skill down low. But again, great play by Jake Muzzin. I do also want to note that pass by William Nylander takes him to fourth in the entire NHL in high-danger passes. So, you know, people oftentimes talk about how dangerous of a passer Marner is, which he absolutely is, not to take anything away from Mitch Marner. But this also shows that, you know, on the Leafs' quote-unquote second line, they have an equally as dangerous passer.
Shout out to Willie Styles, man. He rarely does he disappoint me. And then the Leafs took that deficit 3-2 into the third. I had in my game notes here, it just says, holy shit, Foligno is mean. And that's all I had to say, because he was just being a little shit out there. And I love to see it. He just cross-checking people, finishing his checks. He looked good. And then the game was able to continue late. Ottawa kept their 3-2 lead. But there was a penalty for, I think it was Foligno's penalty. And he came out of the box, and it was kind of a weird shift with him thrown between Tavares and Matthews. And they were able to work the puck to get kind of a bit of a greasy goal, but also a nicely worked goal.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe if the Leafs are struggling down late in the game, maybe this line gets thrown together again. Something for Sheldon Keefe to think about. But, I mean, yeah, Tavares tries a wraparound, which it is what it is, and then the rebound goes right to Matthews. And Matthews, with, you know, that kind of time and space, is he's not going to miss too many times, so. Great finish by him, but again, it's like one of those things where just all these little line combinations seem to be working nice for the Leafs, so it gives me a little bit more faith going forward, at least 5v5, that if things do end up getting stuck in the mud, that we're going to be able to find some kind of random magical combination to get, at least get us out of the mud.
Absolutely, and that is something we'll get into when we do our Habs Leafs preview podcast later in the week, that there's just so many different line combinations, and there's a lot of conversation to be had on it, but we don't want to be here till next Tuesday. So we'll save that for later, but there's a ton of options for our mad scientist, Sheldon Keefe. So he's got to just be twiddling his fingers at that. Now that put us back into conversation for maybe the Leafs can win the President's Trophy here. They get this win. They catch Las Vegas. They catch Colorado. You never know. And then 9 seconds into overtime, Mitchie Marner had, I'm just going to say it, just an absolutely horrible play, which led to a 2-on-1 to Tkachuk, who passed it off to Norris. And, you know, Fred's not going to bail you out. So 4-3 Senators.
I mean, Mitch Marner giveth and Mitch Marner taketh. And sometimes he makes these passes and you're like, oh, okay, bud. Like, I don't know what you saw there. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, but that was just silly. And I mean, yeah, that's a bad pass. Morgan Riley is not a good 2-on-1 defender, and then the puck goes literally right through Frederik Andersen's five-hole. So, I mean, if you're shooting on Freddie, shoot five-hole, and it's going to go in, you know, 9.9 times out of 10. So, good play by Josh Norris to shoot there. But, yeah, a bad play by Mitch Marner. But, again, it's a bad play where no one's probably talking about it if your goalie can make a save that's, you know, above 0.2% difficulty in a game.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not going to rag on Freddie for that one, because that's a goal that a lot of goalies would let in. But just on the night, you know, 4 goals, 28 shots. It is what it is, right? He's certainly not inspiring any confidence in us. So, Lebda, do you want to get to any stars of the game for tonight? Did you have a star in this excellent affair?
Yeah, what a game, man. I think this was the hardest time I had picking a star. So, you know, a lot of times we go advanced stats or kind of maybe a little bit more obscure on things. I'm just going to go straight box score stats here. So, John Tavares is my first star.
Well, come on, everybody, let's eat some curls. Come on, everybody, let's eat some curls. Come on, everybody, let's eat some curls. Let's go eat some curls.
Old Captain Kale, 2 points on the night. That brings him to 50 points in 55 games. So, again, people were really ragging on him at the beginning of the season. He's just absolutely turned it around at the right time for the Leafs. So, here's hoping old Captain Kale can be lifting that Stanley Cup.
Nothing would make me happier. Nothing would make me happier than seeing him drink a kale smoothie out of that Lord Stanley's mug. I agree. He probably would have been my first star. No, you know what? This guy deserves my first start, irregardless of who you picked, and that's Jake Muzzin.
Well, life on the farm is kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy like me came hack. Thoroughly to ride, early in a sack. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Same thing. Box score stats, baby. They don't lie, even though they do sometimes. 49% expected goals, but the man had a goal and an assist, and he continues to melt my heart every time I watch him play. Just makes all the right plays. Smart guy. Even on a night where the team doesn't have it, the team's not really trying, he's still giving her out there. So you love to see it.
Yeah, you can't complain about how Jake Muzzin's playing. I'm just really excited for, you know, the guys like Jake Muzzin to start playing when the games really mean something and they get really intense into the game and can really shine. It's going to be a fun playoffs. I'm going to say it right now. It's going to be a fun playoffs for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, you saw it. Basically, the only people that were clearly giving their all tonight were the bottom Sixers and Nick Foligno. Now, if we quickly do get into the bottom Sixers, they actually, those two lines, they played pretty well tonight. Engvall, Mikheyev, Kerfoot was actually our best line on the night tonight. And then that fourth line with Thornton, Simmons, and Spezza, they didn't fare half bad either. So that is somewhat encouraging going into the playoffs, because I am a little bit concerned at how that old man line is going to fare. But if they can put up average numbers while just providing the leadership and everything else that they provide, you just kind of feel like they're going to click in a couple goals here and there that are in some crucial moments.
Yeah, that's why I really want Adam Brooks to sneak into the playoff lineup, because he clearly got that old man line going. And then it's probably Pierre Engvall coming out on that third line. Wayne Simmons moves up. I think that's my ideal kind of setup. Obviously, Zach Hyman on the first line, Nick Foligno on the second, and so Galchenyuk coming out as well. But you know what? That old man line, again, I said Toronto's going to have a fun playoffs. I think that old man line, even if it is Thornton, Simmons, and Spezza, they're going to do something in a game that's just going to either, you know, win us a series or tie a game that lets someone else win the series. They're just going to do something big this year, and it's just going to be so, so fun to watch.
Definitely. I feel like that line, if it gets off to a slow start in the playoffs, Sheldon will have a quick trigger to maybe pull Simmons off that line or do something to, because with the way they're setting up that line, Riley Nash is going to be on the third line, which is probably going to be a bit of a black hole offensively. So we are going to need that fourth line to chip in. I would love for it to be able to happen with Simmons on there. But I am pretty confident that if they did get off to a slow start, we probably would see some adjustments to try to get some offense out of those guys. But you just want to see the Wayne train chugging in the playoffs. See him, you know, punch Corey Perry in the face 17 or 18 times.
Oh, yeah. That first game, you know, Foligno, Simmons, I bet you see Joe Thornton. They're going to be flying around, hitting everything they can. And hopefully they can, you know, chip in that offense too, because we know Montreal is going to hit stuff, but they can't chip in offense. So, you know, it's going to be a fun series. Hopefully those old men can, you know, be an effective fourth line so we can see that for the feel-good factor. But, hey, the Leafs do have lots of options. We spent lots of time talking about it. We'll probably talk about it again. But, hey, it is what it is. We'll see what happens. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm so tired of this boring regular season hockey. I just want something to mean something again.
Honestly, I am so amped to do our playoff preview podcast and just really get into all these machinations and combinations. I'm ready for it. Now, Lebda, did you have any final thoughts on that one tonight?
No.
I didn't think so. All right, so with the loss, the Leafs move to 35, 13, and 7 for 77 points. Still the division champions, still a meaningless game. The next game could mean something for jumping a team or two in the other divisions for the purposes of the third round, but we'll cover that when we cross that bridge. So, yeah, well, that about wraps it up for me.
Yeah, that's about it for me on the evening as well. Now, guys, if you did enjoy this, please like and subscribe. Leave us a review on your podcast platform if that is possible. Also, give us a follow on Twitter. And check out our YouTube page, Buds All Day podcast. There's content constantly going up on there. You know, we have videos of the podcast, highlights, stream kind of highlights and stuff like that. So check that out if you are liking what we are saying and you are interested. And, yeah.